welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, July 7, 2020. A member of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces is arrested for committing a crime in northern Bahr al-Ghazal.
We will not allow that such activities to happen in the state. And it is good now. The criminal is already detained by security organs, and it will be taken to the court.
And health officials in South Sudan say the country is free of polio.
Samples are taken, and these samples are sent to a referral lab in Uganda, Uganda Virology Research Lab, and it is analyzed if there's any polio in the samples. I don't want to be too technical. So it is based on those things we are able to say there is no polio in the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state have arrested a member of the South Sudan People's Defense Force for allegedly killing a teenage girl who refused to marry him. The soldier shot dead the girl and injured two others yesterday in Awil town. The spokesperson for the South Sudan People's Defense Forces says he is yet to receive an official report about the incident. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Aken Dengtong says a soldier shot and killed his 16-year-old sister, Adun Dengtong, yesterday in the Haisalam suburb of Awil town. He says the soldier shot his sister in the head after she refused his marriage proposal.
This guy said that he want to marry this lady, and this lady said, no, you are not my class. Which lady has told her that you are not my class? This is what has annoyed him, and she went to Juba.
Okay.
Stolen the gun, he came to my house, sitting there in sitting room. Then he started asking and ignoring them, telling them that you girls always telling me that I'm not your class. So today I have brought you, just remove the sister, just because my sister say I don't want you.
Tong says he want justice for his sister. Northern Bahr al-Ghazal State Secretary General Dominic Kang says he heard multiple gunshots while preparing to meet Vice President Hussein Abdul Baghi, who was visiting from Awil. Kang says the suspect has been identified as someone with the Army's Tiger Division who arrived from Juba the same day as the shooting.
There is a man, soldier from Tiger Division, who arrived from Juba. Eventually, when he arrived the town in Awil, he called a lady to come to him. But lady has responded to him that let me complete my declaration so that I can go to you. Immediately he come in and he find a lot of lady around her, and he start shooting her on her head right away.
Kang says the suspect has been arrested by security agents in the state and will be arraigned in court after investigations are completed. The newly appointed governor of Northern Bahr al-Ghazal State, Tong Aken, says it was saddened to hear the news of the shooting and says he and law enforcement authorities will make sure the suspect is brought to justice.
No, it is not good, actually. As you know, our state is a very peaceful state. Justice might take place. We will not allow that such activities to happen in the state. And it is good now, the criminal is already, the suspect now is already detained by the security organ, and it will be taken to the court. The human rights of the girl, rights of the women, even the child rights, all these things will be protected by law, and we will protect them.
Governor Aken says a priority of the new government is to make sure the rights of women and girls are protected. Army spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kong says he has yet to be officially informed about the incident, but says he read about it on social media.
I have not been given an official report, but because the nature of the crime that you are referring to that has been committed, it was committed by someone in his private capacity, not someone in love with a woman.
Kong says military officers should never use force to resolve differences with anyone, and says the soldier will be tried in a court of law. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Cameroonian rights and press groups are alleging a military cover-up in the death of journalist Samuel Wazizi after the military on Monday refused to hand over his body to the family. Cameroon's military in June admitted Wazizi had died at a military hospital in August last year after months of silence on his whereabouts or condition. Supporters of Wazizi, who was arrested for allegedly collaborating with Anglophone rebels, have accused the military of torturing him to death, a charge the military denies. Moki Edwin Kinzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Spokesman for Cameroon's military, Serge Cyril Atongfak, says they will not hand over the body of journalist Samuel Wazizi to his family anytime soon.
La famille n'a rien entrepris en 10 mois pour récupérer le corps. Malheureusement, aujourd'hui, elle ne le peut plus parce que...
Atongfak says no family member or lawyer can have access to Wazizi's body now because it has been sealed. He says the body was sealed to allow investigators to determine the cause of death as ordered by Cameroon's President Paul Biya. Before Biya ordered the investigation, says Atongfak, Wazizi's family had 10 months to remove the journalist's body from the mortuary, but they refused. Wazizi family member and spokesman Tar Jarvis rejects Atongfak's claim, which conflicts with the public record. He notes the family had been seeking the journalist's whereabouts since his arrest and disappearance last August when they filed a complaint, but authorities did not respond. The military, under public pressure in June, finally admitted that Wazizi had died at the military hospital just days after his arrest. Jarvis says the family immediately went to court.
The family filed a case in court for the court to actually grant that Wazizi's body be handed over to the family or be brought to Buya. The person who actually kept the corpse in the mortuary is the government. And till now, the government has not contacted the family officially.
French Ambassador to Cameroon Christophe Guihou said President Biya in a June 5 meeting promised an investigation to determine the cause of Wazizi's death. Family members, their lawyers and colleagues accused the military of torturing and killing Wazizi, a charge the military denies. President of the National Trade Union of Cameroon's journalist Denis Kwebo says the military's months of silence and refusal to hand over the body is clearly a cover-up.
Le gouvernement confisque le corps de Samuel Wazizi pour éviter qu'on ait la preuve de ses vices.
He says the government confiscated the body of Samuel Wazizi to hide evidence of torture the journalist underwent before the military killed him. Journalists are reiterating that a national independent commission should be set up, says Kwebo, to investigate what killed Samuel Wazizi. Wazizi was a presenter for Chilean Media Television based in the southwestern town of Buya. Cameroon's military arrested Wazizi in Buya for allegedly supporting Anglophone rebels who want independence from the French-speaking majority. Cameroon's four-year separatist conflict in its western regions has displaced more than 500,000 and left over 3,000 people dead. Rights groups have accused both sides of committing atrocities in the conflict, including abductions and murders of civilians. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The Sudanese government is praising some residents of Jebel Mara for what it describes as their civilized way of expressing themselves during days of protest for better security in the area. Mohammed Hassan Al-Tahashi, who headed a government delegation to Nertiti town, told reporters on Monday that the Sudanese government is pleased with the level of political and civil maturity shown by the protesters at Jebel Mara. A Sudanese analyst says there is a possibility a similar protest could start across Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The delegation arrived in Nerchiti town on Sunday and met with various groups to listen to their demands. Traditional leaders, traders, women and youth took part in a week-long sit-in in front of the headquarters of West Jebel Mara locality to demand improved security in the area. Al Taishi, a member of Sudan's Sovereign Council, commended the thousands of protesters for demanding their rights through peaceful means. Speaking in Arabic, Al Taishi said the delegation came to Nerchiti to support the town's demand for change.
إن الحكومات المحترمة ورجالات الدولة المسؤولين المحترمين.
The truly respected and responsible government officials are those who fear the voices of civilians, not the sound of bullets. This sit-in, in this highly civilized and organized manner, is a powerful weapon which must be used by all oppressed people across the world.
Locals accuse members of the paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, for committing atrocities against civilians and called on the transitional government to improve security so they can return to their farms. They also urge the government to disarm civilians and ensure that perpetrators of human rights abuses face justice. Yesterday, the delegation agreed to replace 5 security officials, establish local courts, and form a joint security operation to improve security so farmers can turn to their crops during the rainy season. But some protesters said words are not enough, and they will remain at the sit-in until their demands are met. Sudanese writer and a political analyst Abdulmanem Himit, who has been following events in Darfur, says the Nerchiti sit-in is a strong signal to the transitional government that citizens know their rights. He says he would not be surprised to see similar protests staged in other towns across Sudan with people demanding economic reforms.
The Nerchiti sit-in are considered as a qualitative shift in demands, as Darfur has been associated with armed movements. The situation indicates that those who took up arms did so because they were not given the right to peaceful expression. In my opinion, the idea of sit-in may extend to other areas to fulfill demands.
Retired Sudanese Police General Ibaidallah Abdul Bari says insecurity in Sudan will continue as long as the Rapid Support Forces cannot be controlled. Speaking in Arabic, Abdul Bari says Sudan's security sector must be reformed.
Up to this moment, senior officers of the Rapid Support Forces in the fields are unable to fully control their troops. These forces are structured along ethnic lines. Everyone seems to be acting individually. Top military leaders are trying to do their best to control the situation, but it's going out of hand.
Al Taishi told protesters that negotiators at the peace talks in Juba will consider allocating development projects to address the needs of the Darfuri people, whom he says have suffered the effects of war. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials in South Sudan say the country is free of polio. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes. And where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes. So, yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. In our health segment today, we look at polio in South Sudan. The World Health Organization and the Ministry of Health in South Sudan say the country is free of polio. The director in charge of polio eradication program at the World Health Organization in South Sudan says the country recorded zero cases of polio in 2018 and 2019. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
Officials say the last wild poliovirus outbreak in South Sudan was in 2008 and continued through the first half of 2009 with a total of 64 persons affected. They say the last case was recorded in South Sudan's northern Barkazal state in June 2009. Health officials say the last circulating vaccine-derived poliovirus recorded in the country was in 2014. Dr. Sylvester Malegemi, head of WHO's polio eradication program in South Sudan, says the polio surveillance system found no cases of polio for the last 2 years.
We have colleagues that from the ministry, from partners that go to the communities and actually look for cases of paralysis. When this is done, samples are taken and these samples are sent to a referral lab in Uganda, Uganda Virological Research Lab, and it is analyzed if there's any polio in the samples. I don't want to be too technical. So it is based on those things we are able to say there is no polio in the country.
George Ausenio Lege, head of the expanded program on immunization at the National Health Ministry, attributes the polio-free status in South Sudan to vigorous efforts by the government and NGOs that include routine immunization and surveillance systems carried out in communities across the country.
The polio campaign in the South Sudan especially, we are doing 4 rounds of the polio campaign for the whole country. We used to call it National Immunization Day. This National Immunization Day, normally we are doing the first in the beginning of the year, especially because we are targeting the dry season so that we can able to reach all the corners of the country. The beginning of the year, February and March, then we're having November, December, or October, November.
Lege says they try to vaccinate all children under the age of 5. Dr. Rosa Jack Mapur, chairperson of the South Sudan National Certification Committee for Polio Eradication and dean of the College of Medicine at the University of Juba, says a team from the Africa Regional Certification Commission, or ARC, visited Juba, Jonglei State, Western Equatoria, and Warap States and spent 10 days looking at the South Sudan's polio eradication process.
Having accepted the document means that now our claim that we don't have polio is accepted. It will now be the process of the region being certified. We don't certify country by country. Now, out of the 47 that I told you, we were remaining 4, that is South Sudan, Cameroon, Central African Republic, and Nigeria. All the others were accepted earlier on.
Dr. Mapur is urging mothers and other guardians to continue taking their children for polio vaccinations to avoid a resurgence of the disease. She says the fact that documentation has been accepted does not mean polio cannot return to South Sudan.
Make sure that your child receives full immunization. One. Two, ensure that when the child is feeling sick, you report to the nearest health facility. Three, when your child or any child near you seems to have acute paralysis, please report to the nearest health facility so that the child is helped.
Polio is a highly infectious viral disease that largely affects children under 5 years old. The poliomyelitis virus is transmitted by person to person and spreads mainly through the fecal oral route. The poliovirus can also be passed through contaminated food and water, according to the WHO. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Global epidemic outbreaks will continue to emerge if governments fail to take active measures to prevent more zoonotic diseases, says the author of a new report out this week from United Nations Environment Programme and the International Livestock Research Institute. Zoonotic diseases, which are illnesses such as Ebola and Lassa fever that jump from animals to humans, are on the rise, says Bernard Bett, one of the authors of the report.
Basically, it's because of the way we are continuing to utilize natural resources. The population is increasing, and basically agricultural intensification is leading to use of, you know, large populations of animals which are not really given enough time to develop properly and protect themselves from diseases.
Which diseases in sub-Saharan Africa specifically are increasingly being seen, having increasing in number of outbreaks or increasing intensity of outbreaks?
So we are talking of zoonotic diseases which are, we keep counting things like Ebola, things, you know, like avian influenza, things like, so these are viral diseases which jump from animals to humans.
The report also points out, though, that there are solutions. It has a specific focus on Africa because the region has responded to a number of zoonotic epidemics, and the region could be a potential source of effective solutions. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so we are exploring, you know, more partnerships between medical, veterinary, and environment communities to develop surveillance systems. You know, you realize if there isn't good information flow across these multiple disciplines, then you wouldn't really go far in identifying where the new cases are coming from. The other main recommendation we are giving is more acceptance in markets and livestock production systems, because we need really to enhance biosecurity in these markets and also production systems. Yes, so I think the other thing is about use of technology. If we learn from things that have been done in the past, for example, in developing vaccines, in developing diagnostic systems, you are more likely to deploy them quite fast when new diseases comes up.
You specifically head up the One Health Center, which focuses on improving human health as well as animals and ecosystems. What are some, have you guys seen or developed any really innovative solutions that you don't think are being talked about enough?
So we are setting up now, and one of the entry points would be for us to, first of all, start mapping hotspots. So if you look at the sub-Saharan Africa, there are areas in which we think there is likelihood to be more emergence of diseases. So once we do, we incorporate geographical features, socioeconomic practices, and also climate change, we should be able to identify areas within the continent where we think more focus should be put in place. The next thing would be engaging the locals through social media platforms, mobile phones, to enhance surveillance within those areas.
That was Bernard Bett, co-lead for the International Livestock Research Institute work on emerging infectious diseases. He was speaking with Ricky Schreier from Nairobi, Kenya. Still in Kenya, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has announced directives that would see the country reopen in phases from COVID-19 shutdown. However, the president warned Monday that restrictions on travel and public gathering could be reimposed if the coronavirus gets out of control. For VOA News, Rahel Ombo reports from Nairobi.
President Uhuru Kenyatta has eased the restrictions that were put in place early March to contain the spread of the coronavirus. In a nationwide address Monday, the president said this will be a phased reopening meant to strike a balance between containing the virus and sustaining the country's economic life. He said the restrictions on movements in and out of Nairobi, considered the country's coronavirus epicenter, will end on Tuesday. Travel in and out of Mombasa and Mandera, two of five other counties still under partial lockdown, had their restrictions lifted Monday afternoon, but with conditions, Kenyatta said.
Should the situation deteriorate and pose a challenge to our health infrastructure, we will have to revert back to lockdown. In the next 21 days, we shall study patterns of interactions and the spread of the disease. Any trends that signal a worsening of the pandemic, we will have no choice but to return to lockdown at zero option.
Kenyatta's address comes as the country battles a steep rise in confirmed COVID-19 cases. Kenya is seeing about 300 new cases each day, a figure that has more than doubled in the past month. Total COVID-19 cases now stand at 7,886, with 160 deaths. Some of the previous measures remain in place. Restrictions on political and social gatherings, together with the dusk to dawn nationwide curfew that was put in place in March, will continue for another 30 days, Kenyatta said. He said places of worship can open, but are limited to a maximum of 100 people inside, with events not lasting more than 1 hour. Congregants must be between ages 13 to 58 and have no underlying medical conditions. However, the president said local air travel will resume Wednesday, while international air travel will restart on the 1st of August. Kenyatta said his intention for the country was to reopen and to remain open, encouraging Kenyans to exercise shared and civic responsibility to ensure success.
But history has taught us that the COVID crisis is not the first health disaster with such enormous economic challenges. There were many more before this one. However, we must all be cognizant that those who overcame previous disasters and finished on top did so by first changing their mindsets. Put differently, it is not enough for the government to pump resources into the economy using stimulus instruments, as we have been doing. Such efforts will undoubtedly go to waste if people do not co-create solutions with the government.
Kenyatta said he believes the path to recovery will be rocky and uneven, but ultimately can be navigated. Raya Lumbor for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a Luo song by Musa Juma.
Rafiki mpenzi wangu, baby, tera e Mombasa show. Adia ponyara e rokano.
We've been listening to Musa Juma singing in Kijaluo. The Luo are originally from South Sudan. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for joining us this evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Chiewa, malaika wangu nisani.